We're here on Daf Pei Omid Beis. We've covered the Braisa that differentiates between the Surim that apply to bringing one's pasture of Behemet Daka into Eretz Yisrael as opposed to the Yaros of Eretz Yisrael. Not the fields of Eretz Yisrael, but the Yaros, the forests of Eretz Yisrael. In the forests, it's okay. And this is a jump-off point for the discussion of the Takanos, various takanos that were established by Yoshua ben Nun with regard to the Nochlei Eretz Yisrael, those who would inherit and divvy up the land of Israel. Tanur Rabbanu, we learned in a Braisa, Asara Tnoim Hisna Yoshua, and here we go on to Daf Pei Aleph Amud Aleph. The Braisa is going to enumerate, and then the Gemara is going to analyze the 10 conditions that Yoshua ben Nun set down with regard to the Nochlei Eretz Yisrael. Number one, Aleph, Sheyu Marin Bechorshin, that it would be permissible for anybody who shepherds his animal to graze them in the forests of Eretz Yisrael. And even if that forest is privately owned, as you'll see on the top line of Rashi, Baal Hayar, nevertheless, he, the owner of the forest, is not permitted to object to those who want to pasture their animals in those forests. And we'll see later on that it doesn't matter what shevet you belong to. You may belong to one particular shevet. Nevertheless, it's mutter to be mare, to pasture your animals, even if the forest is owned by a member of a different shevet. That's takana number one. And one might ask the following question: how is it possible for Reuven to go into the private property of Shimon in order to pasture his land? That would be a violation of Gzela. And I can think of two possible answers to this question. I did not have a chance to check in the Mefarshim, but one answer might be Hefker Bezdin Hefker, that Yeshua Bezdino instituted a Hefker Bezdin Hefker. The other way is to say that this was a Tnai in the Yerusha of Eretz Yisrael. Any individual who, as part of a family, part of a Shevet, would inherit a parcel of land, these were the conditions that set, these were the restrictions in his bialis. He would not be allowed to object to others bringing in their animals into his forest. Number two, umalaktim eitzim bisdoseihem, and there would be a permission to collect wood from the fields of others. The Gemara later on is going to explain what kind of wood, what kind of trees does this heter apply to. And then we get to the third condition set by Yoshua ben Nun. The Melaktim Asavim Bechol Mokom, and there's permission to collect grass in anyone's area for the purpose of feeding animals. And obviously, it's very important for animals to have food to eat, in this case, grass to eat. And therefore, in order to facilitate Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, so that the owners of animals could feed their animals with asavim, in this case with grass, Yoshua established this condition that anyone would be allowed to gather grass from the fields of others. So we're talking now about going into forests and using that as grazing lands. We're talking about collecting trees. We're talking about collecting grass. All this for the sake of feeding one's animals. However, in the third condition of asavim, of grass, there is a qualifying and restricting law. Chutz mi, with the exception of certain kinds of grass that grow, and that's called tilton. Tilton is a type of kitnios, Rashi explains. And the Rambam explains that it's a tzemach ha-chelba. Chelba, I believe, is what we call in English fenugreek. And we have to see why this was set up as an exception. Apparently, with regard to other grass, the grass will, even if taken, will resupply and grow back again very quickly. But in the case of tilton, apparently when you remove tilton from the ground, you will be mafsid this vegetation. And Rashi explains that with regard to these asavim hagedelim ima, there is grass, that grow around this particular kitnios, which we call tilton, and they are beneficial for the growth of this legume. And if he were to try to remove the grass around that, Rashi says that would be a hefse, that would be a damage to the tilson. So again, although the heter was for grass, it wasn't for ruining someone else or taking someone else's tilson. And tilson apparently is quite a commodity. So therefore, don't take grass that is there as a benefit for the tilson. Tilton, I should say, tilton. Now, they used to use this tilton as a kind of a spice, a sweet spice, to sweeten the contents of a tavshil. And Rashi points this out in Masechta Beitza, and it's also in Masechta Rosh Hashanah. Then, number four on the list, and hopefully we'll come back to the first three later on, Vikotmin Nitios Bechol Mokom. This is a real chiddush here. Yoshua establishes that kotzitzin anfei ilon, that you're permitted to cut off branches of a tree. This is normally called zomer. And the reason for these branches is so that you can plant them elsewhere. You can graft them. And all this was a heter in order to facilitate people to plant and to feed their animals. And the owner is not allowed to protest. And Rashi says, Kotmin etios mina ilon kotem bad litain lita. There's no zero toleration for a protest from the owner of the tree. And perhaps one could say that, in a sense, by cutting off these branches, the tree will replenish itself and replace these branches. That's why zomer is considered one of the malachas. It's actually a tolda of tolesh, of notea, because it causes and stimulates growth. Chutz, once again, we have a limitation rule, migrophios. Now, what exactly are grophios? Rashi says, hakotzeis zesov lisrof, meinech shtei grophios, mole shnei grophim. And Rashi interprets the word grophios as agrophim. Now, an egrof is when you tighten your hand and make a fist. And Rashi is saying that you're not allowed to remove these netios in an olive tree, or perhaps in the stump of an olive tree. And what we're talking about is a sugya Rashi invokes in Bava Basra Daf Pei, and we're talking about in that sugya a person who cuts down an olive tree and wants to use the tree itself as wood, then he leaves a stump of the tree, and it's got to be high. How high is high? Because again, he wants to replace those shoots, those netios that he removes, so that the stump of the tree will be able to replace them, replenish them, and grow back. He should leave a stump that is high enough, Rashi says, that it has shtei agrofim, two fistfuls. Again, I can't tell you exactly in inches how high that is. In any event, this is all necessary in order to take an older olive tree that's not producing much and give it a new lease on life. And Yoshua instituted this takana that people would not be allowed to cut off shoots from these olive trees without leaving a stump, because otherwise it would be impossible for the stump and the olive tree to replace and regenerate itself. However, Tosus here has a different interpretation of grophios, and he means two branches of an olive tree. In other words, the Brisa basically is saying that with the person who's allowed to take from his friend's olive tree has to make sure to guarantee to leave a olive tree stump, as we call it. And you have to leave two branches, according to Tosus's pshat. He says here, "Ikevon shederech ha'olam lahashiram be'ilan k'shekotz tzanofam k'dei l'sarfan." In other words, if let's say he's cutting down his olive tree and he's going to burn the wood as firewood, then it was accepted practice to leave parts of the ilan, because they would regenerate, that would allow the tree to regenerate itself. So you're not allowed to be mafsid the ilan itself. Rashi and the Meiri point out that if you cut down the ilan completely, that's called a hefsi, that's a hezek. And the tree will not be able, kvar eino motzi peros, it won't be able to regenerate the fruits, in this case the olives, on the tree. Now we move on to the fifth category. And that is umayon hayotze bitchila. We're talking about a mayon, a spring, shenoveh min adama michadosh. In other words, it's something that's brand new. At the time that the people of Israel would enter into Eretz Yisrael, after they settled the land, there would be a spring that came out of the ground, and that ground was privately owned, and nevertheless, Bnei Ha'ir Mistapkim Mimenu. It was absolutely permissible for the people who lived in that city to have access to this mayon, so that they could take the water and use the water. Now, although Rashi mentions mayon chadosh here, you get the impression, Bitchila Rashi says chadosh kolshkein, you get the impression from Rashi that there's a kavachomer mayonos yeshonim. In other words, not only did this takana permitting access to the water of these springs apply to springs that existed at the time of Yoshua, when Yoshua instituted and enacted his decrees, because certainly his decree was relevant and valid with regard to those bodies of water or sources of water, that existed at the time of Yeshua ben Nun. The Chiddush here, as Rashi points out, of the word bitchila, hayotze bitchila, means even if these springs did not exist at the time that Yeshua entered into the land, nevertheless, they are included in the this condition permitting anyone to use those waters. And again, even though this mayon is located on private property, and that's called Bnei Ha'ir. Now, I'm not sure why this heter is limited to the Bnei Ha'ir, and perhaps one could say that these are dinim of Shechenim. If you learn Baba Basra and the laws of Shechenim, you'll see that there are special rights that apply to the Bnei Ha'ir. Someone coming from another city doesn't necessarily have those rights. In any event, what we're talking about here in a spring is not irrigation water. For example, if the Bala Karka digs in order to find Mayim, to find sources of water which he, in a sense, discovers below the ground, that doesn't belong to the Bnei Ha'ir, to the public. It's not in public ownership. That's already something that's private. What we're talking about is what's called a mayon hanovea mi'atzmo. It's natural and it's not man-made. And this you'll see in Tosfos Divrei HaMashchil u'mayon. Now we move on to number 6. So again, just to summarize, the Baal Karka cannot be makpid on those who want to take their animals and graze. They want to collect the wood, they want to collect the grass, and they can even cut down branches of trees. They cannot be prevented from entering in and having access to water supply. And then, number 6 on the list is Umechakin Biyama Shel Tveria. Now we're talking about fishing, and specifically with regard to the body of water called the Kinneret, which is right, which borders on Tveria. And in this case, any Jew can go fishing with a hook and a line in the waters of the Kinneret. And the Chiddush here is that even though part of the Kinneret, as we'll soon see later on Amud Beis, fell into the lot, into the portion of Shevet Naphtali, so it was privately owned, nevertheless, anyone from any Shevet has access to these, to set up the fishing of the fish underneath the water. However, here too, there's a restriction, ubilvad shelo yifros kola. What is shelo yifros kola? Rashi says, derech tzayodim litkoa yisedos velasos gidre kanim v'mayim lehilochet sham dogim v'kom lo v'kom gezer. He gives different names for it, but basically what it means is that people would actually set up a kind of a fence of reeds and would knock them down through Yesedos down to the floor of the ocean. And what's so bad about setting up these fences that were down on the bottom, you know, to drive these into the water and make them fences for capturing the fish? The answer is Ya'amid es hasfina, because if he puts these things down, these fences, then what's going to happen is it's going to interfere with sfina overisham, with a sfina that travels there, and that's going to create a hefsed to the bailim. And I assume that when we're talking about a hefsed to the bailim here, we're talking about the owners of these liners, of these ships. Ashba is a little bit bothered by the language of the brisa. He thinks that it would have made more sense if the Braisa would have said, Kidei Shelo Yamid Es Hasfina. That's the reason why the limitation here on the fishing rights here in Tveria is such that you cannot drive these reeds into the ground and set up a fence into the ground, the bottom of the sea, is Kidei Shelo Yamid Es Hasfina. But rather, the Lashon HaBraisa is different. V'yamid es hasfina. And here the Rashba quotes another interpretation in the name of the Ravid, and he says, Shelo yamid biyam shel chavero sfina shel tzayodim kidei lifros es hakela lotzud dogin. It means he should not stop the sfinos of his friend. These sfinos were carrying the tzayodim, they were carrying the fishermen, and he would stop them down in their tracks in order to facilitate, in order to allow him access to set up these fences and these traps for the fish. So that what's going on here is that imagine these ocean liners that are on the way, you know, to, let's say, to some great gigantic port, you're going to slow them down by saying, you know, wait until we finish our work. And that's going to be Yamed HaSasfin, it's going to slow down the boats. And that you're not allowed to do. Tosis, Dibra Maschil, Umechakin, and again, keep in mind that the word Umechakin means that you're allowed to put out these traps. Tosis says that the tam ze afilu bale hayom atzma masurim bekach. He says that this reasoning of not interfering with the boats applies even to those who own, as Naftali did, parts of the Kinneret. And the reason for that is that when the Shvatim inherited the land, they agreed upon conditions, one shevet vis-a-vis the other, shelo yifrisu kela b'yom kidei lotzud dayog v'yamidu b'kach sfino shel chavrehem. Meaning fishing is fine, setting up traps is fine, but not doing it in such a permanent way that it interferes with the boats. And that was the agreement, the mutual agreement and consent of the Shvatim. And that includes even those who owned that area of the water. Because the access to the water, the use by ocean liners or by ships, is something that applies to all the different tribes. Again, you have to know exactly how this works. As we said at the outset, is this midin hefker bezin hefker, or some sort of a tanai in the original Yerusha, and this is very relevant for Shevet Naphtali. Let's move on now to number 7 on the list of 10. V'nifnin li'achore hagoder. You know, part of living in a land for anybody is to have access to bathrooms. And there weren't, you know, an ample amount of public bathrooms, you know, for the people who were going from place to place. The travelers had to have access to bathrooms. And what they're allowed to do is, li'achore agoder, imagine there's a fence that surrounds a person's private field. He owns that field. They're allowed to go on the other side of the fence for purposes of tznius, and do what they have to do there in order to relieve themselves. And the impression I get here is that we're not allowing him to enter into the field, to trespass, so to speak, because the phrase here is la'achore ha'goder, which means behind this fence. Again, the fence is privately owned, but he's not going into the fence. He's allowed to go behind it, and that gives him a certain element of tznius, of privacy. Now, what's the chiddush here? Why would you think that this is impossible? This is, if not for the tanai of Yoshua, be prohibited? And the answer is and you'll see this here in the Gemara Ayin Beis, is that the Gemara points out that the heter here went as far as allowing this person who has to defecate to use the stones from this fence. Now, the fence, as we said, is privately owned. He's allowed to actually take stones out of the fence. In those days, that's how they cleanse themselves in the anal area. They used stones. And even as a result of, taking these stones from the fence, there would be a piritza, there would be an opening in the fence. Nevertheless, that was the chidushia, that was permissible. And that's a big pella. Now, the Brisa goes on to say there's even a bigger pella. Vafilu besade malea karchom. Karchom is a very expensive vegetation, and it needs shmir ma'ula, special protection to safeguard it. Nevertheless, even though he's taking away from this fence for the purpose of, you know, relieving himself and cleansing himself thereafter, nevertheless, Yoshua established that we're not worried about the piritza, the opening in the fence. All this for the sake of allowing a person to do what he has to do, what he absolutely has to do for his own health and his own personal hygiene. So he's removing a stone, and as a result, there may be damage to these plants. Now, charcoal in English is translated as saffron. Now it says, Umahalchim b'shvilei arishus, and you're allowed to enter into other people's fields after the harvest season, when they took the grains from the fields after they harvested them and put them into goren, into the various silos. And at that point, the owners of the field, because right now there's nothing in the field that could get damaged, they allowed the people, and by law, they had to allow the people to walk there and travel there. And this was a shortcut for them, for the travelers to go from place to place. They didn't have to go all the way, circle all the way around the field. But that's called Shvilei Harishus. Shvilei Harishus means these are pathways that have Rishus Bailin. They have the permission of the owner, so there's no trespassing. And Yoshua ben Nun was makpid that no one could be makpid, that no one could protest, as Rashi says in Dibra Maskel Mahalchim. The Aruch has a different interpretation of Shvilei Harishus. He says they are called by that name because they're not hefker, but yet there's Rishus of the Bailin. Yoshua ben Nun's Tnai, his enactment was that the Bailin have to give Rishus for those to enter into there. But not as far as, the Aruch is not willing to go as far as Rashi. Rashi says that Mafkirim Siddoseim, if you take a look at Rashi, Dibra Maskil Mahalchim. And again, these are the permissible paths. People are allowed to walk in through them as shortcuts until what period of time? And the Brisa says, Ad Sheterid Revia Shnia. We're talking about the time that the second rain comes down from the Shamayim, the rains, because from that time and on, when it walks on that path, would already create a hefsed by stomping on the Zriya, because from that date, Rashi identifies that date based on a sugya in Tainus as Yud Zayin Mar Cheshvan. That's when the second major rain came down in the rainy season. That's when the Zroyim that were planted earlier start growing. And at that point, there's no permission for a person to walk in there. Now, according to the Brisa in Tainus, there's one opinion that is the 17th of Cheshvan. Rashi quotes that here. There are other opinions. Some say it's the 7th of Cheshvan. Some say it's the 23rd of Cheshvan. But whatever it is, that is the day in which these new seeds begin to grow. And if the public would travel through these fields, that would be harmful to the plants. Now, what we want to get at is the number 8 here on the list. And again, we're talking about travelers. Mistalkim litzide adrochim mipnei yesedos adrochim. Now Rashi Dibur Amaschel Mistalkim writes bechol eis afilu bisman shatvua besodos, even when there are tvuos, tvua, the grains are growing in the fields. And what's going on here is that we're talking about the winter season, and the problem is that we need drachim. Drachim are pathways. And because of the rains on the ground, if people would start walking in this area, if the travelers and together with their animals would trample over these muddy dirt roads, that would damage the roads because they would create some sort of potholes that would dry up later on in the summer and it would become obstacles for people to travel. So in order to avoid such a situation, Yoshua said that the public is not allowed to go during the winter season through these roads. They have to go along the sides of the roads. And Rashi points out that that means even if Bizman Shatvua Besados, when those fields have crops growing in them, and obviously there's going to be some level of loss of crops. Now I would assume that therefore it would be incumbent upon the owner of these fields, realizing that their fields border on the roads, they would have to take some sort of precaution. Maybe, I don't know exactly what they could do, if they could plant a little bit inward and be marking themselves from the roads. But in any event, people were allowed to pass and walk on the sides of the roads, even though it would cause a damage to Zeroyim. And all this is in order to facilitate, to guarantee that the roads would not be damaged by travels. Now we're up to number 9. Vehatoeh bein hakromim. Now we're talking about wayfarers that get lost, you know, they didn't have such sophisticated signs and so forth, is mefasig viola, mefasig vioret. Mefasig means menatek vechotech es, menatek es asmoros. In other words, in order to clear themselves a pathway, especially through the vineyards, they were allowed to cut down zmoros, Rashi says, because otherwise they'll be totally lost. And if you take a look in the Rashba, he says that there are certain vine shoots that will go up and down and will make it impossible, impeding his ability to find the right road. Or as the Meiri expands upon it, he's allowed to cut down these vine shoots, but, says the Meiri, he doesn't become, you know, it's not laissez-faire, he's going to have to pay the owner of the kerem for whatever damages he sustained. So again, he's allowed to save himself from harm, but he's going to destroy someone else's property. And this is a sugya in Bava Kama of how far we go with Pikuach Nefesh. In any event, we're now up to the final and last of the 10 takonos of Yoshua, Umes Mitzvah Kone Mekomo, that if someone dies and he has no one to bury him, there's a special halacha that he becomes, in a sense, the owner. Again, he's gone already, but he he, as far as Kfurup is concerned and burial, he owns that area. And the owner, the technical legal owner of the real estate is not allowed to object to any sort of, you know, claiming, I don't want anyone buried in my field. So again, what happened? How did this person die on this privately owned land? It was unpredicted. He collapsed. And now he acquires ownership, so to speak, in a spot on the ground where he fell, and that becomes his burial ground. And the landowner has no right to object to this and to put up a fuss and a protest. The Rambam writes at the beginning of Hilchos Niskei Momon Perek Hei that this din only applies if the corpse was found outside of the boundaries of the city. Inside the city, the public and the community is responsible to guarantee that this body, this dead body, will be buried in a proper cemetery. Okay, fine. That's what we have, the overview of the 10 takanos of Yoshua. Let's take it from the top, back to the first takana of Yoshua. Shiyu Marin Bechorshim, to allow those who are grazing their animals to go into the forests and graze there, even if those forests are privately owned. Omra Popolo Amoron Eladaka Begasa. This only applies to small animals in a large forest where there is a great amount of foliage and trees that are growing. Aval, but if it's a daka bedaka or gasa bedaka, lo. The kolshken gasa bedaka. Again, if there's a small animal in a very large forest, then Yoshua's tanai is that you cannot make a stink. The owner of the forest cannot object. But if we're talking about a small, limited yar with a very limited amount of ilanos, then it's very possible that by taking even small animals, cattle, goats and sheep, behemadaka, that could cause a serious loss to those few trees in this sparsely treed forest. And then begasa, begasa, you have a larger forest with plenty of foliage and plenty of greenery, but nevertheless, the animal itself is a large cattle, and as a result, no matter how large and dense the forest is, those larger animals, like cows and so forth, might do damage even to this larger forest. So again, so far the heter is daka begasa, but not daka bedaka, and not gasa begasa. The kolshkein gasa bedaka, and how much it goes without saying, ein tzarich lomar, that if you have larger animals like cows and horses and the like, they cannot pasture in a small forest area. Delo, that would not be permitted. And again, the reason is because it would cause a loss to the owner of the forest. However, the Am Shel Shlomo discusses one allowing his own animals to graze in his own forest, regardless of the size. That's all mutter. We're only concerned about Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, and we want to restrict grazing in a forest that might cause damage to the owner of the forest. The forest itself is not called the Yishuv, and therefore there's no hafkah here that doesn't undermine the Yishuv of Eretz Yisrael. And the only issue is to what extent we can allow this to go on until such time as we realize that the private owner is suffering a loss, is taking a severe damage. Next, Umalaktim Eitzim Bistosehem. And we're allowing one to gather Eitzim, wood, from his friend's fields. Lo Amarin, says the Gemara, El Behizmi Vehigi. These are called Atzei Sneh. I guess you'd call them sort of bushes. And the Gemara in Sukkah talks about the fact that you're not allowed to use them for schach, because it's a dira srucha. It's very difficult to live in such a place. These shrubs and atzei asneh were very prickly, and it was not comfortable. And basically, the rule here is that these thorns and thistles are not considered of great value. But, again, if you need them, you can take them and use them for firewood. Aval b'shar eitzim lo. Other trees were not permitted by Yoshua because it will damage and cause a loss to the owner of the tree. And not only that, afilu behizmi vehigi lo amaron ela b'mechubarim, the heter of Yoshua only applies to these shrubs that are growing in the ground. Of betlushim lo, if the owner of the field, through a great deal of effort, removed, he was tolesh, these shrubs, and he wants to use them for whatever his purposes are, then you're not allowed to take them. Once they're detached, that's a simon, that's clear-cut evidence that he, the owner of the field, has vested interest, financial interest, in taking these shrubs. So as long as they are mechubarim lekarka, then it's okay. But here, the Shita Mekubetzis quotes the Ramah, and he wants to explain in another sort of way what's the difference between those shrubs that were already detached and those that are still attached and growing from the ground. He wants to say that as long as they're still growing from the ground, and this is the exact opposite of what Rashi was saying, then it's going to be a hefsed for the Zeroim that won't be able to nurture themselves and be yonek enough from the karka. Now, I'm reading the Ramah in Shita Mekubetzis a second time, and I see he's not that far from Rashi. Again, Rashi indicates that Tlushim is a proof positive that the owner of this field wants to use these Hizmi. But the Ramah says, no, the reason why in the case of Mechubarim you're allowed to take them is because these plants actually draw nourishment from the land. They deplete the land. V'mafsid eshar zroim. And therefore, noach lo lebalakarka sheyitlum. In other words, when you remove these shrubs, you're actually you're benefiting the owner of the karka. But tlushim, they already are not depleting the land by yonkim. They're not yonkim anymore. And therefore, the balabayis would be makpid not to take them. And finally, one further limitation in this second principle of Yoshua, malaktim eitzim, is lo afilu b'mechubarim, even though you're allowed to take these shrubs when they're growing, lo amarin el belach, that only applies them when they're still wet. Aval yaveshim lo, once they dried up, then they have a certain function, they're used for firewood, and at that point, it's a hefsed to the balabayis, and the balabayis is not going to give them up for the sake of the public. Ubevad shalo yisharish. And also another limitation, another restriction is he's not allowed to take the roots of these bushes, of these shrubs. In other words, the hope here is that these shrubs will regenerate themselves, and that might be the wish, the intention of the balabais, to grow them again. Maybe they provide some sort of offense for him, or maybe he wants to wait till they dry and cut them down and use them as firewood. Maybe he could use it for privacy purposes, whatever it might be. Therefore, to remove these shrubs from their very shoresh, from their very roots in the ground, that to uproot them from their roots, that was not permitted. Now we get up to the third condition that Yoshua set up, and that is Malaktim Asavim B'chol Mokom Chutz Mi Spei Tilton. As we discussed earlier, to take the grass for feeding the animals anywhere but with the exception of the grass that grows around the Tilson, because that would be Mafsu the Tilson. And the Gemara asks, L'meimer de Tilson Malula Asavim? Is it really possible that this vegetation, which we called fenugreek, which grows amongst the grass, is it possible that the grass is really beneficial for this legume? Urimini, I have a question from a Mishnah in Kilayim. The Mishnah in Kilayim in the second parak says, Tilson she'olsa im mine asovim ein mechayven oso lakar. If this tilson, this legume, grows with amongst various kinds of grasses, then we don't require the balasada to be oker to remove these grasses because of the iser kilayim. And this seems to indicate that he himself will ultimately remove these asavim because they will damage the tilson. And the halach in kilayim is that you're not this is in Parshas Kedoshim in Perek Yutes of Vayikra, you're not allowed to have growth in your field that's kilayim, grasses together with this tilton. If they grow together, that is kilayim. Now the question is, you're not allowed to be mekayim kilayim in your sod. You have to uproot them immediately in order to circumvent the violation of kiyum kilayim. And the answer is that since ultimately, down the line in the near future, the farmer is going to uproot these grasses that are growing in any event, and that he's going to do because they might ruin the fenugreek. So therefore, since he doesn't have any intention to maintain the kilayim, because the grass is detrimental to this growth, that's not called mekayim kilayim. Now, it's mekayim kilayim requires a certain kavana, a certain interest, and a benefit in keeping them there. Here, he has no interest. In any event, it's clear from this Mishnah that the grass is not beneficial for the fenugreek, and therefore, why do we care? Why does Yeshua care if he removes this grass? The grass is anyway going to be mafs of the talson. Omar of Yirmiyah lokasha. The Mishnah, as far as kilayim is concerned, is lizera. That means he wants to plant again and again. Vekan, but here, our brisa with regard to the conditions of Yoshua, that's lizirin. That's a case where he wants to feed the animal the soft branches. So in other words, what's the purpose of this farmer in growing this fenugreek, this tilton? What's his interest here? And there are two possibilities. One is that he wants to eat the tilton. The other is that he's growing it for the seeds and he's going to replant these seeds so he could produce new crops. And that's the Gemara's language. Kan lizera, kan lizirin. Zirin means the stalks that grow, and the stalks that grow from this legume are actually edible. So Rabbi Yirmi explains, Lizera koshule asovim. If his purpose is to grow these kidneys for the purpose of zerav seeds, then the grass is harmful. The makshile, they weaken this growth. Let's just review this last distinction. In the case where he's growing this fenugreek for the purpose of its seeds, then the grass is harmful for the seed, it weakens the seed, and it saps the seed of its ability to be sown and to be planted. And therefore the Mishnah Kalayim in that context says that the farmer is going to remove this grass in any event, so he's not interested in being Mekayim Kalayim. However, in the case of Lizirin, where he's growing this fenugreek for the purpose of growing the stalks and eating the stalks, they're edible, they're fit for human consumption, then the Chikaimi Beni Asovim, when these plants grow amongst the grass, Mirakva. In other words, the grass itself provides like a cushion, and it expands, it allows the fenugreek to expand, to grow very, very well. Again, there's like a bed of grass, and that allows this fenugreek to be mispashe, to expand, and to grow. And in such a case, he wants that grass. And therefore, the traveler, or the neighbor, or whoever he is not allowed to take out this grass because it's going to cause damage to the owner of the tilton. Ibai Sam the Gemara gives another answer to reconcile our brice of Yeshua ben Nun with the Mishnah in Kelayim. Kan, the Mishnah in Kelayim, is talking about a case of Li Adam. In other words, he is going to remove the Asovim in order that they shouldn't damage. But Kan, in the case of the Brisa, Libehema, he's not growing these kidneys, this talton, for the sake of feeding human beings, but rather for the sake of feeding his animal. The Kaven de Libehema, who desires, since he plants for the sake of animals, Ha'asovim nami mi boile, he would like to use not only the fenugreek itself, but also the asovim, also the grass around it. That too will be removed, will be harvested, so to speak, and will be given to the animals. The Gemara asks, how should the person who wants to take this grass identify, how would he know whether or not they were, the Tulsa was planted for man, for human consumption, or for animal consumption, in such a way, in the latter case, that he wants the grass as well. Amar Papa, Sha'arei Mishare. If he plants them in a certain organized way, that's called Arugos. He's got, patches or lines. That means that it's Litzorech Adam, he plants it for man. Lo Sha'arei Mishare is then Libehema. If he didn't plant it in these arugos, then he indicates that he's planting them for the sake of animal consumption. It's not worth it for him to make that extra effort and plant it in such a way that is arranged in these arugos, these garden beds, as they translate it. Move on to the fourth tnai of Yoshua. Fekomtin nitia bechol makom chutz migrofios shel zayis. You are permitted to cut down these branches of trees anywhere with the exception of the shtei grofios of a zayis, of an olive tree. There he has to leave a certain amount of the olive tree so that it could regenerate itself, as we discussed earlier. And according to... let's see the Gemara itself. The Gemara says that what is this case? What are these Eitzim? Peresh Rabbi Tanchum v'Rabbi Birias Mishum Zaken Echad Bezayis Kibetza. If you want to know what the shear is for leaving a certain olive tree alone, you know, that its stump is able to regenerate itself, it's got to be kibetza. What does this mean, kibetza? So what I have here for you is the following. This is what I could suggest as the proper understanding of this Zaken Echad. We're talking about a regular olive tree. And we're not talking about the case of the stump that we mentioned earlier as the exclusionary cause, as the restrictive cause. Notice Yoshua excluded knocking off this tree stump that could be regenerating, and therefore we think, the impression we get is that he would allow cutting off the shoots from a normal olive tree. However, so this shear of kibetza is not identical with the shear of our Mishnah of shtei grofios, which are shnei grofim, as we saw in Rashi. And I assume that kibetza is a smaller shear. And perhaps we're talking about two different types of shoots and two different types of olive trees. You know, in a regular olive tree, I guess a classical, healthy olive tree, then it's enough to leave a stump of a kibetza. But in the Mishnah, the Brice of Yeshua ben Nun, it was discussing a case of a kind of an olive tree that requires more of a stump, a larger, taller stump, and that is shtei grofios. So again, I can't tell you exactly what the height of an egg is to guarantee that you're left with the olive tree is left with a trunk that would shoot off, would regenerate itself. And I'm not exactly sure that I can tell you what's the difference between one olive tree and the other, and why we have these two different shiurim. And the plot grows thicker because the Gemara now says that bekanim ubegefanim minapkak ulamaila. And it sounds like there's something called a pkak in these olive trees, or at least in the kanim. The kanim are kinds of reeds and shoots from the vines, and the pkak is called the kesher elyon. And this kesher tachton means some sort of something that looks like almost a knot or a line that goes around and around the branch. And bekanim ubekefanim minapkak ulamaila, meaning you have to make sure that the kesher tachton is left intact. So it's from the knot and above. The knot, which is close to the trunk, and that's the one that if you leave it, you can guarantee that this shoot will be able to regenerate itself. And then it says, ubishar kol ha'ilonos, and now we're talking about other trees, not olive trees, and there the shear is min ubo shel ilon. Now the ubo is another word, says Rashi, for the pirio, for the fruits of the tree. So that we're talking about a tree that has these soft kind of branches, and they are producing fruit. And if you're cutting down these branches, then you have to guarantee that you're only cutting down those soft and thin branches that look like fruit, they resemble fruit, but you're not allowed to take from the main thick, large branches, which are like trees unto themselves. And that's called mi-chubo, velo mi-chudo, or chubo, shel ha-ilon. Again, there are different girsos here, whether it's chubo or chudo. Chubo seems to be mi-loshen machbo, some sort of a hiding place. But nevertheless, from the middle part of the tree's height, that's where the branches are numerous and dense. And it says, v'lo mi-chudo, that part should not be touched. Or if you have chudo milamala, means from the upper point, which is the top part of the tree. Let's say, for example, every tree has the tallest branch. That's the main part of the tree. That's called the central branch of the tree. That's called the chudo milamala. So from that upper point, in that major branch of the tree, you're not allowed to cut that down. And all this, I believe, if I understand correctly, is to avoid some sort of a hefsed and to guarantee that the tree can grow and regenerate new shoots. And then it says, min chadash she'eno ose peros velo min yashan shu ose peros. So you're allowed to cut off new shoots that, let's say, grew during the last, let's say, 12 months, and they haven't yet gotten to the point where they produce fruit. Those you're allowed to cut off. However, yashan, if you have an old netiyah, an old shoot, shu ose peros, then that should not be cut down. Now, it's very interesting because before we said mina peros ulamala, indicating that you could cut down fruits. But again, if we say that the word peros here refers not to the fruits themselves, but to the type of branches, and we're going to assume these are new branches, that's okay to cut down. Fine. Now we have the case of lo mina yashan shu ose peros mimakom she'eino roe esachama. So there are certain branches that are concealed amongst the other branches, and they're not exposed to the sunlight. And as a result, they do not generate good fruits, good healthy fruits. And in that case, it seems that you're allowed to cut them down. Because lo min hayashan shu ose peros, but in the case of mimakom she'eino roe esachama, in that case, those shoots that are sort of like in the middle part of the tree and they don't receive any sunlight and they don't produce fruits, you're permitted to take those shoots and cut them down. And that's what we have here on Daf Pei Omid Beis. Now we move on to, on Daf Pei Omid Aleph. Now we move on to Pei Aleph Omid Beis. And so that was on, I said Pei Omid Aleph. I meant to say Pei Aleph Omid Aleph. And now it says on Pei Aleph Omid Beis, V'lo mimakom shu roe esachama, that you should not be cutting down these branches, these gigantic branches of the tree that are exposed to the sunlight, because that's the main primary part of the tree itself, and the sun is going to facilitate the maturation process of the fruits, and they're going to be very sweet. And of course, you don't want to cut them out and be mafsu the Baal HaBayis. Shenemar, and the Gemara quotes a pasuk here at the end of Sefer Dvarim in Parshas Vezos HaBrach. It says, "Umi Meged Tvuos Shemesh," and Meged means some sort of a sweetness. In other words, the shemesh itself sweetens the growth, the vegetation, the fruits, and therefore the Baal HaIlan, the owner of the tree, is permitted to protest that they shouldn't be cutting down these branches. And then it says, Umayon, this is number 5 on Yoshua ben Nun's list, Hayotze Bitchila, even if it's a brand new spring, is Bnei Ya'ir Mistapkin Mimenu, the members of the community are allowed to use this supply, this spring, as a water supply, and the Baal HaKarka has no right to object. Omar Rabba, Barhuna, no Saint Lo Domin. However, even though he's allowed to have access to the waters of this spring, and he does not have to receive permission from the owner of the Karka, nevertheless, he still has to pay Domin. That was the opinion of Rabba Baravuna. All Yoshua ben Nun did was he gave permission to have access to the water and use it for your purposes, but not free of charge, not gratis. But v'les hilchus ha-kavasei, we don't paskin like Rabba Barav Huna, but rather we expand the takon of Yeshua. Not only did Yeshua allow him to have access to the water, he didn't even require that there should be any compensation to the owner of the spring. And then we have the sixth case of Yeshua, umechakim, which means you're allowed to put out these traps in Yama Shel Tveria, even though Yama Shel Tveria in this Kinneret area was included in the inheritance of Shevet Naphtali, and it was privately owned. Bilvad Shlo Yifros Kola, he was not permitted, if you remember, to put those fences down at the bottom of the sea, because Yama Nesasvina, that would slow down the boats, and that would cause a hefsi to the owner of the boats. Avol tzadhu birishatos umich moros. He's allowed to use all sorts of different types of traps that are delineated here, because these traps do not slow down the boats. Tonar Abonon, now we're talking about the Kinneret, you know, the Sea of Tveria. To which chelek, to which shevet did it fall in the division of the land of Israel? Tanur Abonon, Yama Shel Tveria Bechelko Shel Naphtali Haisa, the waters of the Kinneret fell entirely into the section, the inheritance of Naphtali. V'lo od Elishen Natal Milo Chevel Cherem Bidroma Kidei L'kayim Ashenema Yom V'doron Yerosha. In addition, Naphtali inherited an entire portion of Cherem. Now Cherem is a mitsuda. In other words, they gave him an area where Naphtali and the members of his tribe could place their mitsudos in order to capture the fish. And that's Bidroma, that's on the southern part of the Kinneret, even on dry land. And that technically would have been outside of the boundaries, the borders of Shevet Naphtali, but it was granted to him so that he could use that land area for setting up his nets and doing his fishing. And that's a fulfillment of the pasuk in Vizos HaBracha, Yom V'Dorom Yerosha. He inherited not only his portion in the Yam of Tveria, or what we call Kinneret, but also in the southern part of the Yam, in order to allow and facilitate that he could put down his mitsudos in that area. Now, once we're talking about the Nachla of Naphtali, Shevet Naphtali, the Braisa is now quoted to go on and discuss the other Shvatim. Rav Shimon Elazar Omer, when they divide up the land into its Shvatim, they declared Tlushim Shebaharim, all the growths that are cut off or detached in the mountainous area, Becheskas Kol Shvatim Em Omdim, they belong to any of the Shvatim. Anyone could come along and take them. They don't belong to any specific Shevet, even if it's located within that Shevet. And the reason for that is, it's like Sholol. Sholol hametaltalin shenimtzu bi'eretz Yisrael. And what this means is that we're talking about possessions that belong equally to all of Klal Yisrael, all the Shvatim, and they are therefore considered like Sholol. Like, for example, when Klal Yisrael took over and defeated the nations of Canaan, they took booty, and that booty belongs to all of Klal Yisrael. Every single Shevet has equal rights to those spoils, and so too, that applies in this case of Tlushim Shebaharim. And these are vegetations and trees that again have been uprooted from the soil, from the ground. They were found in the mountainous areas of Eretz Yisrael, and they had the same status of Sholol. The Braisa continues and says, Umechubarim, however, as far as trees and so forth that are still attached to the ground, Bechezkas oso shevet, then there's a chazaka, there's an assumption of bailus, of possession by that shevet which inherited the land where these trees are growing. V'ein lecha kol shevet v'shevet miYisrael she'ein lo bahar u'bashfela u'banegev u'ba'emek. Every single shevet got a wide kind of territorial characteristics. They got mountains, and they got, Shvela means valleys, and they had Negev and Emek. Every single type of topography was guaranteed to each one of the Shvatim. And how does the Gemara know this? How does the Braisa know this? Rav Shimon derives from a pasuk shenemar, Pnu usu'u lachem uvo'u har ha'emori v'elkol shechenov, which literally means, in the English translation, turn yourselves around and journey, come to the mountain of the Amorites and to all its neighbors, barava bahar u'bashfela ba'negev v'chof hayam, in the plain, on the mountain, in the lowland, and in the open country, and at the seacoast. If you take a look at Rashi, on the word Negev, regarding the word Negev, he seems to assume that we're talking about Eretz, Sodos, Ubikos, Hamenugeves, Mikol Lachluchis. You know, we're talking about a land that has fields, that has valleys in it, but they're sort of dry areas. That's called Negev. Negev milashon minugeves. Minugeves means it's dried out. And ein ba ilanos, in such dry areas, the trees don't grow. V'achama zoreches olav tamid. And as a result, there's hot sun that beats down, there's no foliage or shade, and it dries up the ground. That's called Negev. And the Gemara goes on, the Braisa goes on to say, V'chein atomotze b'knanim, even the knanim, u'prizim, amorim, these nations that occupied the land of Israel, they also had all sorts of types of land. Shenemar, because the pasuk says, V'el kol shchenov, alma shchenov hachi havi. Even the shchenim on the area of Har Amori and the nations that are mentioned here that lived and had taken up and settled in those areas, they had all these different types of lands as we described. Now this V'chein Atomotzi is an addition in which Rav Shimon Elazar wants to bring a proof that everyone Every Sheva got a chilek in all sugei arotzos, in all kinds and categories of arotzos. And he brings it as a proof, and the nations of the world did, nations of Canaan, and certainly the Shvat in the Jewish people. So the pasuk v'el kol shcheinav is creating some sort of a hekesh, so to speak, and equates the nations of Canaan with Amori, and this is going to prove to us that the neighbors were endowed with lands that had both mountainous lands, lowlands, open countries, valleys, and of course the 12 tribes of Israel conquered this land from the Canaanite nations, and therefore each one of the Shvatim would have lands of these sorts. Now we get back to the seventh of the Tnoim of Yoshua, about those who would need to use the facilities they were allowed. Nifnin lachori agoder afilu besodashi malea karchom, which is a very expensive growth. Omar of Achabar Yaakov lo nitzucha, Yoshua did not have to be mechadish this condition that you're allowed to defecate over there, even if there's such a karchom. Elo litol heimenu tsror, and this we indicated earlier, that you're allowed to take one of the stones in order to facilitate cleaning himself up out of the fence of his friend. And that's the Gevaldige Chiddush here of Yoshua's Tnai. So it means, Afilu b'sodashi malei karkom, even though the karkom needs shmir me'ula, and that's why the fence was there, by allowing this person to take away stones from the fence, that's a pritzas hagoder. And even if as a result the karkom is going to be removed, there's going to be a hefsed, nevertheless, we allow him to do this. Amar Rav Chisda, afilu, excuse me for just 1 minute, afilu b'shabbos. You're allowed to take these stones even on Shabbos. Shabbos, of course, has an Iser Muktzah. A stone is a classical case of Muktzah. That's what's called Muktzah Machmas Gufo. And nevertheless, Mishum Kovod Abrios, for the sake of maintaining the dignity of a person, they allowed this Iser Muktzah to be alleviated, to be trumped. And that's what we mean when we say that Yoshua bin Nun established this. Now again, the perspective here of Muktzah is understood to be an Iser Drabanon. And the question here is, above and beyond the Issa Drabbanan of Muktzah, if this stone is cemented into a wall, then it's possible that removing such a stone would be a malacha called Soser, and then we're dealing with the Doraisa. That for sure should not be Mutter on Shabbos. And that's an interesting issue here in this Sugya. I can't exactly tell you whether Rashi would go that far and allow such a thing on Shabbos. I don't know. I could only tell you that the Meiri and later on the Amshel Shlomo, they insist that we're talking about stones that are loosely placed one on top of the other to form some sort of a wall, and taking one of the stones would not constitute Meleches Soser. And the Yamshel Shlomo goes even a step further. He claims that these stones are kind of average sized stones, and by taking these stones it does not cause a breach in the wall. And causing a breach in the wall, which again, above and beyond the Hefseid Mamon here to the wall itself and the Karakum, is also a kind of Soser Drabonon. So therefore the Yamshel Shlomo wants to say that the Heter here is not to violate a Malach of Shabbos Drabonon, even of being Poreitz the God there, of being Soser the Kosel. The Gemara now tells the story. Mar Zutra Chasida Shokel Umahader. He was a chassid, and he took a stone from this wall of a sada, of somebody else's sada, but afterwards he would replace the stone. The Amalei L'Shamei, and he told his Heisbacher, the Acherkach, he says, L'machar Zil Shirke. On a weekday he said to him, go back, take cement, and make sure that whatever we took in terms of the stone would not create any sort of a hefsed to the goder. And this is all a reflection of the pious nature of Mar Zutra, who was called Chasida, because that's exactly what he was. He was very pious. And even though he took these stones for Kavod HaBrios to clean himself, nevertheless, he told his shamish, to make sure that during the week he would cement the stone, replacing it permanently in its original place. And this was a pious act to maintain the reparation, to make sure that he would repair the wall, even though Al Pidin, strictly according to the law, he was not obligated to do so. The Gemara now analyzes the case in the Braisa of Mahalchim B'Shvilei Rishus, that travelers are permitted to go through these permissible paths up until the second rain, if you recall. And that means that the sodos were considered hefker to allow people to find the shortcut, and they don't have to go all around the fields and make the whole circuitous route. Ad sheteired revia shnia, until such time, Rashi identifies it again, as we mentioned earlier, as Yud Zayin b'mar cheshvin, when the second rains of the fall season come down, because at that point on, there is roi tvua. There's a tzmicha, there's a growth of Zeroyim, of Tvua, and those who tramp on this land will destroy them. Omer Papa, V'hai Didon, Afilu Tal Koshila. He says, our karka, meaning in Bavel, is much softer, there's a lot more rains than in Eretz Yisrael, and it's full of what do we call it in English? In Hebrew it's called butts. It's full of mud. And even tal kashila, even if the rains haven't fallen here in Bavel, the pouncing of the person, the travelers on the ground, is going to damage the ground, because the ground is soft. Even if there were no rains, just simply the tal, the dew that comes down at night, is going to soften the land. And therefore, once there was a planting season, once the planting season began, a person should not travel through this field, even if the rains have not fallen down. So Yam Shel Shlomo derives from this Gemara that the Takana of Yoshua applies even where Jews owned cultivated lands, that a person and the public should not trample through these lands when it would damage the seeds that have been planted there, and it's harmful to the seeds, and you should not be creating these kinds of shortcuts if it'll damage the seeds, even in foreign countries. We're not limited to Eretz Yisrael. This is not a din in Yishuv Eretz. In Eretz Yisrael, of course, the damage to the seeds would be after the autumn rainfall, the second autumn rainfall, which would be on the 17th of Mar Cheshvan, according to Rashi. Then we have the eighth enactment of Yoshua ben Nun, Umesalkin le Tzidei Adrochim, in order to avoid trampling over these grounds during the winter season, after the second rains, when the ground will be damaged, then you're allowed to go into the bounds of other fields and the Tzidei Adrochim that border on these roads. Mipnei Yisedos Hadrochim, because again, the potholes that will be created by the trampling of human beings will permanently damage these roads. And as a result, the public is allowed to spill over into these tzidei adrachim, the sides of the roads. And then the Gemara tells us a story about Shmuel, Rabbi Yehuda, Vishakli, Viazli, Biorcha. They were on the road, and what bothered them were these yesedos, these pegs on the roads. Again, something similar to say that these pegs are like potholes in a sense, because what happened is there is this kind of muddy cement type stuff that gets very hard during the dry months, because during the winter months people trample on them, and as a result the wayfarers cannot go in their derech. They have to make this circuitous route, and that's what Shmuel and Rabbi Yehuda did, even in Chutz Laretz, because there was these yesedos. Havi mistalik Shmuel at tzidei adrachim, Shmuel would go off to the sides of the road, and this was all a fulfillment of the Tanai of Yoshua. Even though, again, Yoshua made that Tanai in Eretz Yisrael, nevertheless, he felt, Shmuel, that it would apply even to Bavel. Amalei Rabbi Yehuda turns to Shmuel and he says, Tanayim Shehisna Yoshua Afilu BeBavel? Is it really so that these conditions apply even to Bavel? And therefore you'll have to spill over into the Tzidei Adrachim and in effect trespass into the fields of privately owned fields of Jews. Amalei Shani Omer, I claim that Yoshua instituted his enactments and his conditions afilu b'chutz laretz. In other words, once he made these enactments for the benefit of wayfarers, that enactment and that heter applies even in chutz laretz. And there is a kind of a kalvachomer here in the logic of Shmuel. Kol shkein shehutzuch lahasno shemut alasus kein bebovel shemitzuyim sham shayoros v'ovrim v'shovim v'drocham. How much more so did Yoshua have to make this condition even in a place like Bavel, because there are so many shayoros that are going there, and they have to break into the what we call the tzidei hadrochim. Now there seems to be a fundamental machlokus in between Shmuel and Rabbi Yehuda whether the tnayim of Yoshua was limited to Eretz Yisrael or applies even to Chutz Laretz. And some of the Achronim want to suggest that they were debating here, Shmuel and Rabbi Yehuda, whether the tnai of Yoshua is a din in Chalukas Eretz Yisrael Shvatim. Yoshua divided up the land on this condition, and therefore it only applies to Eretz Yisrael where the land was divided by Yoshua. Or is it a din of Hefker Bezdin Hefker? And this Rabosai is something that we sort of, we were anticipating this, that we didn't know what was the underlying basis halachically for Yeshua's takana. Was it a din of chalukas Eretz Yisrael, and the tanai was that you give me this right, I give you this right, and that's the mutual consent in the inheritance of Eretz Yisrael, or was it a din of hefker bezdin, and therefore it should apply even in Chutz Laretz? Shmuel held it was din of Hefker Bezdin Hefker for the benefit of the wayfarers, and also for the benefit of the Drachim, and therefore you're permitted to walk inside the border, enter into the border of a privately owned field, even in Chutz Laretz. That's how Shmuel understood it. Again, we're talking about Bavel, which is a center of Jewish life, and there was always, you know, communication between the communities of Eretz Yisrael and Bavel, and therefore it certainly makes sense that Yoshua's conditions and enactments should apply even in Bavel. Now again, whether or not it was Yoshua himself who enacted these tnayim even in Bavel, or maybe they were self-accepted by the community of Bavel, that I don't know. In any event, Rabosai, I think we'll end here, even though there's plenty more to do. And Belineta, tomorrow, we'll pick up the story of Rebbe and Rebbe Chiya.